Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Vegan Proteins, Muscles by Brussels Radio. My name is Giacomo.
And I'm Danny.
And this is episode 112.
Hey, hey, everybody. We're coming into April. Can you believe it? It is officially spring now. How fun. Bye, winter. Let's see how long it takes for it to get nice here in New England, though.
Yeah, I have learned to loathe the spring. I used to like the spring because it felt like it was, I don't know, think of an expression. It's getting warmer. It's time to get to the summer. But to me, the spring is not a thing here. It's like just an extended winter.
It's very short.
It's miserable.
It's very short. Probably won't actually feel like spring until May. May is usually really nice here. And then June, you're like, oh, and it's summer. And it's super duper summer. And then it just stays summer until like September, late September. But October is beautiful also. So I just live here for October is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, and we'll be, well, I don't know. Do we have anything? Well, May. In May, we'll be going to the New England Veg Fest.
Mm-hmm.
That's 100%. We'll be speaking there. So if you're in the area, come on through.
I think we also will have the Salt Lake City Fit Expo, I'm pretty sure.
FitCon.
Yes, FitCon. And also, of course, I mean, Desmond turns 4. It's a big month. It's a big month for Desmond.
It sure is. I'm trying to think, oh my gosh, the years, because he shares a birthday with my mother. Mm-hmm. I don't even know. She's 60-something. 60-something.
Got any spring goals coming up?
Oh, gosh. Well, I am super curious to see how I will be feeling by then and what my body composition will be like. I feel like, well, yeah, that's going to be about like the 6-month mark. So I should be fully recovered, which means my body should be working well in every single way. Right now, I look healthy because I have weight on me again. I don't feel healthy yet. So it's a process. When you compete, whoo, boy, does it really take everything out of you. So, but yeah, by April, I should be feeling good. I'm super curious to see what things will look like. I should be able to push for lots of strength and lots of muscle and really shape things up. What about you?
I actually was thinking more along the lines of gardening. Like I'm very excited to be working on the garden again this year. I know last year we had hoped to get a couple of fruit trees planted. That didn't happen. So I'm hoping that we can get a couple of those back there this year. And last year was not a super successful gardening year, largely because our beds weren't full enough. So I think that's going to be fixed this year. I love gardening. I absolutely love it. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Did you garden when you were a kid?
A little bit. Just a little bit.
What'd you plant?
Tomatoes and zucchini, strawberries.
Did you get a yield?
Yes. But I didn't know what I was doing. I just put seeds in the ground and tried to water them when I like remembered, which is probably like once a week or so because I was little. But I don't know. I just love it now. Like I feel like it's such a good skill to have. That's a separate topic. I could talk about that a lot, but it's a good thing to know how to make your own food, grow your own food. I think everybody should learn that.
And before we go off on too much of a tangent, why don't we get right into today's topic? We are talking about genetic potential. Moreover, what does it take to reach it? And how do we know what your genetic potential actually is?
This is always a really hard conversation for me because I think that the question itself, like, oh, what is my genetic potential and how long will it take me to reach it? I feel like the question in and of itself is like a little bit of a trap. Like it feels, I don't know. This is just a tough conversation for me. So I'm going to let you lead it and I'm just going to chime in.
Okay. Well, I'm curious to know why it's a trap. I want to know what you mean by that when you say that.
I think when most people want to know what their genetic potential is, one, I feel like it's a question that actually can't really be answered. There is no one answer to it. I feel like there's so many different ways to answer this. It depends on the context of a lot of things in your life. I think a lot of times people are asking questions about like, what is their genetic potential? Like, do I have good genetics for building muscle? And I feel like that's a much bigger question than what it sounds like on the surface, for one. Two, I think that a lot of people ask this question to give themselves an out for underperforming.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to call out the laziness in people, yeah, thinking if they can't do it, why try?
Well, yeah, I feel like people start asking this question, and I've asked this question of myself, so I don't think there's anything wrong with asking the question, but I think putting too much stock into it is not great. Because I ask this question, and most people do, when they hit a plateau. They start to hit a plateau after a couple years of training, and they think, well, maybe I'm just getting closer to that genetic ceiling. And, you know, of course, the longer you're training, the closer you're getting to it all the time, right? But there's a genetic ceiling in what way? Is it genetic ceiling in terms of building muscle? Is it the genetic ceiling in terms of getting stronger or faster or more mobile or more powerful? Like, it's just, it's this big blanket question. So I just feel like asking it is, it just feels like a trap. The question just feels like a trap to me. I don't know how to explain it more than that.
Well, sure. Why don't we lead with how much muscle you can put on? We'll keep it simple before getting too abstract with how fast can you be or mobile or this or that. And we'll start with some really simple, I don't want to say fact, but we'll, generally
ranges.
Speaking.
How about that? Range.
Generally speaking, we're looking at around men having approximately 40 to 50 pounds of muscle that they could put on in a lifetime, and women 20 to 25 pounds of muscle, right? And there are all kinds of calculators out there where you can, say, enter in the circumference of your wrists and your ankles.
Pause, because I went to that calculator. Mm. And guess what it doesn't ask you? If you're male or female. Mm-hmm. So it said my genetic potential based on my wrists and ankles and height and everything was I could have 170 pounds of lean body mass.
You're just not trying hard enough, Danny.
So, God damn it. Why does everything in the strength and fitness world have to skew towards men? It is infuriating. Maybe there is a calculator out there that takes your sex into account, but that one, the big one that everybody uses, ain't it? It's just for men. Continue.
And also, there's another way to measure your potential, which the formula is called the FFMI, or the fat-free mass index. And that basically means how much fat-free mass can you put on your frame relative to your height. And there's, of course, metrics that we strive to hit where we look at the genome and we say, okay, well, according to what we see in the genome and the talent that's out there, this is what we can hit. But this is, again, where you can pick apart anything because we're getting smarter with knowing how to train and people are starting at an earlier age. And that, you know, you can argue that point till the day is long. The more we know about something, the better people get from an earlier age and the more years they spend. But still, that doesn't take away from the fact that certain body types, depending on how, where your bones are, how heavy your bones are, you know what I mean? All kinds of factors, essentially, your height, et cetera, what kind of genes your body expresses, like all of these things affect just how much muscle you can actually put on versus someone else. This is where it gets more conversational and less about like just the simple, what is your potential here? I saw an interesting response on Reddit, and the sub basically was saying, well, by the time that you can actually realize your truest genetic potential, your lifestyle potential is going to kick in.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's kind of what I was talking about at the beginning, is like, it depends on a lot of factors. What is your genetic potential at 20, taking a gap year between high school and college with no responsibilities whatsoever, is totally different than what your ultimate genetic potential is going to be when you're 35 and you have a full-time job and you have two kids, because you're a different person. And yeah, your lifestyle is so different. And someone might be like, well, that's not your genetic potential then. But okay, let's say when you were 20, you slept like a dream. And by the time you're 35 and all stressed out, you sleep like shit. Guess what? Now your genetic potential is different. You know, so there's so many things. And when we talk about genetic potential, a lot of times we're talking about under perfect conditions. But if you and I are to look back at our lifting careers, how many times were we actually operating under perfect conditions, perfect sleep, programming, nutrition? I mean, bouts here and there for sure, but certainly not like several years at a time. But here, maybe like a couple months at a time, everything was perfect.
Mm-hmm. And this is where I like to start to argue that as long as the gains are compounding because you're consistent with your efforts and you're getting smarter with your efforts, yes, there are things that will lessen your chance of realizing your genetic potential, but you still get closer and closer to it over time, right? And I think most people tend to miss the mark because, the sunken cost theory. Am I using that right? Essentially, you're putting more and more effort into something for less and less reward, and just it's costing you more time and you're getting less.
That's an entirely different thing. That's just diminishing returns. But sunken cost is when you are doing something that isn't working, but you've been doing it for so long that you're like, I'm not quitting on it now. I put too much time into this.
Well, that's
the sunken cost.
Exactly. Theory. And that's what I'm trying to get into here. It's like, well, you're not really going to get the outcome because your returns are diminishing, but you keep putting more and more effort into it. And so then eventually you just stop.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's obviously not what we suggest. We suggest like you can get there and there's so many moving parts that are involved. Like how could you get there in a linear fashion? Even lifestyle aside, there's so much to learn along the way.
Oh yeah.
There's so many mistakes to make.
Well, I have a list, you know, I might not have been super psyched to have this particular conversation, but you know, I'm not going to show up without a list. So sometimes people will email us or they'll fill out a coaching inquiry. And one of the questions is, do you think I have good muscle building potential? Like, do I have good genetics for muscle building? And it's an impossible question to answer based on just an application and a few photos, because there's a lot of genetic components we can't see with the eyes. In fact, there's only a few that we can see with the eyes. So I'll start with the ones that we can see. Your bone structure, right? You can see someone's frame just by looking at them. If they have wide shoulders and narrow hips, they're going to do better in bodybuilding than someone with narrow shoulders and wide hips. Okay, that's pretty easy to see. Muscle bellies, where your muscle insertion points are. If it's a flexing photo, we can see like you have high lats. That's not gonna look great. Or you have really great bicep peaks. Cool. Like you have good muscle bellies for muscle building. But there are so many things that we can't see, right? Your mental strength. There is a genetic component to how mentally tough somebody is. And if somebody has great bone structure and great muscle bellies, but like crappy mental strength, they're not going to reach very far down this genetic ceiling pathway.
Wait, what is genetics and mental strength? How do those two correlate in your mind?
There are studies that show that some people genetically are just more mentally tough than other people. Like it's coded in their DNA. There's a name for it, and I can't remember what it is right now.
Can you change it?
Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, yes, there's a lot of these things that you can work on, right? We can always get better at these things,
but
it's like you're starting in a different place.
Yes.
Basically. It's kind of like how different people have different pain tolerances.
Yes.
You know, how much mental toughness, how much mental stress can you endure? Because building muscle requires quite a bit of mental toughness.
Right.
And if you're just not that tough, that's not working in your favor, right?
Okay, I got you now. Thank you.
There's also your genetic ability to withstand injury, okay? Some people genetically, you know, maybe they don't have great elastic tissue, collagen, elastin, all of that stuff. They're probably going to get hurt doing the exact same thing that the person next to them is doing that has better connective tissue. Genetically, that person has the advantage. But you can't see that. You know, you might not even know that ever. You might not know it ever. But if two people are doing the same thing and one person's going to get hurt and one person isn't, who has the genetic advantage here? Obviously, the person that can withstand the injury.
Hmm.
The types of muscle fibers that you have. If you have more fast twitch muscle fibers in your body, you are going to have an easier time building muscle. If you have more slow twitch muscle fibers, you're going to have an easier time doing more endurance-based things.
Did you geek out on this stuff when, like, in your early 20s? I mean, I remember scouring the internet, reading all kinds of articles like this. I was just obsessed with it.
I wanted them to come take a slice out of my quad and tell me what I had. Yeah. You know, yeah. I mean, I didn't do that.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I wanted to... You know, it's kind of like how people get the 23andMe test. You just want to know everything, and then you get the results, and you're like, oh, guess none of this actually mattered, did it? Cool, I have wet earwax. Thank you, 23andMe. I probably could have figured that out, but... so, yeah, muscle fiber types. That's genetic, right?
Right.
Your growth response to training. Some people just have a better response to training than other people. Some people are high responders to training and some people are not. You can't see that. Your hormones. Hello? Like, I'm not talking about taking hormones or anything. Just like your natural production of hormones is going to be different than to the person next to you. That's genetic.
Right.
You know, yes, lifestyle can alter that, but we all have a certain starting place. The number of muscle cells and satellite cells and the size of them that you have. The more, the bigger that you have.
The more you have built over time. You have a window of time where you can build them up much faster. Not to say you can, mm-hmm. no matter where you're starting and no matter what age. However, there's something to be said for when like you have a nice open window with low responsibility and you put in lots of time and effort and you're young and everything's working for you and boom, you build those cells. Mm-hmm. You know, you will be at an advantage versus someone else who did not. Take the time building those cells up at a younger age.
Yeah. And there's just other pieces. Like, how do you sleep? Mm-hmm. Are you a good sleeper? Mm. Are you a bad sleeper? I mean, I don't know if that's genetic. I can't say if that's genetic or not, but I think it's like patterns that you establish so young that it might as well be, you know? Or how do you handle stress? Or are you able to eat a lot of food easily? You're going to have an easier time building muscle. Like, there's just so many factors that go into it that I think like fat-free mass index and, a man can gain 40 to 50 pounds and a woman can gain 20 to 25 pounds. I guess that's a good ballpark to operate from, but it is so far from the entire story. And to answer someone's question, do I have good muscle building genetics? My answer is going to be, I don't freaking know. Like every single time. It would take... probably 3 or 4 months to kind of figure out if someone has good muscle building genetics.
The real question you have to ask yourself is, do you have the potential to think about and focus on what is your truest potential? Because if you do, if you're that type of person, you're going to find out. If you're not, you're going to be comparing yourself to just a large pool of data that has no direct answers for you as an individual.
And a better question is like, do I have the work ethic that it takes to reach my genetic ceiling?
And are you willing to accept your genetic potential?
I don't think most people even come close to their genetic ceiling, really. Hmm. I don't think they do. I don't think I am. I don't think you are. And we work really, really hard. I don't think we're as close as we would like to think we are.
I got at least another 10 years.
Well, that's what I was going to say, if somebody were to do everything perfectly, I think it would take 10 years. To reach your genetic ceiling.
More.
No, I'm saying if everything was perfect, but that is almost, that's impossible.
Perhaps. And we're talking potential versus ceiling here.
Right. And obviously, the younger you start, the better. But
yes,
it's a tough conversation. But, you know, you did mention the amount of muscle you could put on in a lifetime. I'd like to break that down, if that's okay, into years. Because I know we've talked about this in videos and other podcasts, but... it's always a good refresher. In the first year of training, first serious year of strength training, a man can only gain 8 to 12 pounds of muscle. And all of these numbers can be cut in half for women, 4 to 6 pounds of muscle in a year, in the first year. A lot of people think, oh, I gained 25 pounds of muscle my first year of training. No, you didn't. You might have gained 25 pounds in your first year of training, and I'm sure... a good chunk of that was muscle, but a good chunk of that was fat, water, glycogen, inflammation, swelling. Like, it was not all muscle. You should still keep doing it, but I just don't want people to think, oh, well, they said I could only gain 40 to 50 pounds of muscle, and I gained 25 pounds in one. So what do you think about that?
And, like, why bother calculating it in terms of pounds of muscle? You have mass on your frame that looks really nice because a chunk of it is muscle and
it's
shaping you. And
hopefully it's functional as well. And improving your quality of life.
Yeah.
So second year, 6 to 8 pounds for a man, 3 to 4 pounds for a woman. This to me, around year two, this is when you're probably going to start to look like you work out. Like just walking around. Might be like, oh, that person works out. Year two. So a lot of people who are really early into their fitness, they might be really, really working hard at the gym and still be kind of disappointed. Like, oh, I just don't look like I lift. It's okay. It's coming. It is coming. I didn't look like I lifted for, about 2 years, I would say. And then finally, it kind of was like, oh, that girl probably goes to the gym, you know? And it wasn't until several years after that that it was suddenly like, I mean, honestly, even in my regular, I wear baggy clothes all the time. I probably just look like a normal, non-athletic person. It's only in certain outfits where you would just look at me and be like, oh, that girl has muscles, you know? It takes time. It takes time. Year three, 4 to 6 pounds for men, 2 to 3 pounds for women. Year four, 3 to 4 pounds for men, 1 to 2 pounds for a woman. And you see this is going down every year, diminishing returns, like you talked about. As somebody who's been training for a long time, if I could gain a couple of pounds of muscle in a year at this point, I'd be over the moon about it. I'd be thrilled.
Can we also talk about, though, what a little bit of extra muscle does, how much of a long way that it goes once you do have a nice frame and once you realize where you want to put more muscle on, you focus on those areas? Like, you can dramatically change your shape within reasoning, right? You're still going to look like you.
Yeah. So a lot of times when we talk about fat loss, okay, let's imagine somebody who is 350 pounds. They might lose 30 pounds and you might just barely notice 30 pounds, right? As opposed to somebody who's already very lean, if they lose 5 pounds, it looks wildly different. So the leaner you get, you can see every single half a pound. You can see a half a pound come off someone's body. As opposed to the larger someone is, or less lean someone is, you have to lose more weight before you can start to see a difference. That same thing goes the other way with muscle. The more muscle that you have, a couple dozen grams of muscle that you put on your body, you're going to start to be able to see where it's going. As opposed to the first several pounds you put on, you might barely notice a difference.
Right. And you're chiseling out your body the way that you want it to. So you're going to dedicate a lot more time on areas that you want to emphasize. Mm-hmm. So even though it would theoretically take longer, if you were training yourself evenly from head to toe, you're going to start to realize how you want to shape things up over the years. And then you can fill in the gaps, like wherever your body struggles to put on muscle, you're going to spend that much more time. And over the course of time, it all comes together, as opposed to how much muscle can you put on average over the course of years. Hey listeners, we hope you've been enjoying this episode and we appreciate your love of all things vegan fitness. For those of you who want even more support on your vegan fitness journey, check out our Muscles by Brussels community and become a member. By joining the team, you are one of our exclusive VIPs. As a member, you'll find over 200 macro-friendly, high-protein recipes that can meet any of your meal planning needs. You'll also receive training programs that update monthly. This training has progressive overload built into it, so you can be sure if you're following the program, you are making progress. All of this and more is located inside our Vegan Proteins members only app. As a Muscles by Brussels member, you'll unlock bonus courses, challenges, and more every month. You'll also be invited to our live Zoom video calls, which happen 2 times a month. And are absolute gold to those who show up. And if you can't make the calls, don't worry. You have the opportunity to email us whenever you want. You'll receive a video response to all of your questions from one of the coaches here at Vegan Proteins every time you message us. Members also receive 40% off many of our other services. And of course, our private community of like-minded individuals is like no other. Best of all, you can try this membership out for a full month at no cost to you with this special offer for our listeners only, because we appreciate and want to fully support you. Use the link in our show notes to sign up for your free trial today. We hope to see you on our next live coaching call. How do you feel about the aging process and how if you don't train at all, you wind up losing muscle every year, and how you make up for that by training, and how that reflect on that for me, if you will, and how you see that defined as what your genetic potential is over the course of, say, a lifetime of...
Whew, what a great question.
Yeah.
First, I thought you were going to stop with, how do you feel about the aging process? And I was going to be like, not a fan.
Still going.
But that's a really great question if you think of genetic potential in terms of, like, what are my senior years going to be like? What are my very elderly years going to be like? When we talk about an elderly population, a lot of times we're talking about mobility, just being able to move through your life, do your tasks on your own, independence, like having independence into old age. But a lot of times when I hear people talk about being elderly, they talk about how the metabolism slows down so much. And the main reason that the metabolism slows down so much into old age is because of age-related muscle wasting, which is largely, not entirely, but largely, it can be slowed down or stopped for even a really long time with eating enough protein and resistance training. Like, the more muscle... So once we hit, I think it's 60 when the actual metabolism does have a downshift. So like truly your metabolism downshifts a little bit, but we start losing muscle. If we're not lifting and eating enough protein, we will start losing muscle past 40 years old. And what I hear from a lot of women is their metabolism, you know, they can't eat like they used to eat. And it all started at 40, right? Everything changed at 40. I think a large part of that is because as we lose muscle, muscle is highly active tissue. It is very metabolically active. When we have less of it, we burn fewer calories. Therefore, we need fewer calories to maintain our weight. And then once we hit a certain age, we are just going to lose muscle. We've never seen, you know, even elderly bodybuilders, right? They still have less muscle than they did when they were younger, even if they maintained a lot of it. So if you're going to lose muscle no matter what, past a certain age, boy, do you want to go into that age with as much muscle as you can possibly have. You're going to remain more mobile and more independent. Your metabolism is going to stay higher. You are going to deal with less osteopenia. I think it's osteopenia, age-related bone loss. Or maybe that's sarcopenia. I'm not sure which one it is. I can't remember. But age-related bone loss, osteoporosis, one of the number one causes of death in elderly people is falling and breaking a hip. And then that leads to infection and they die. So the stronger your bones are, the less likely that is to happen. What's one of the best ways to strengthen your bones? Have more muscle. Like, there are so many reasons to strength train. But as far as doing that to your genetic potential, I think people don't necessarily think of their genetic ceiling in that way.
No, they think of how much muscle they can put on as opposed to how their muscle is working for their body, thus encouraging them to put on even more muscle and stay healthy. It's a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah, that's a super interesting topic. And, you know, I've never been elderly, so I almost feel like, oh, I only have so much room to talk about this. But somebody's got to talk about it. Like, this needs to be talked about. We plan for our elderly years with our finances to a T, right? Everybody's so worried about their retirement. And what about your health? Who cares how much money you have if you can't even move? Like, you want to be able to move and be independent.
This was on the brain for me yesterday, the thoughts escaping me, but it was something along the lines of what you can't see, you don't quantify. Mm-hmm. And it's like you look around and you think of yourself and you think of all that you've invested in having a healthy and strong body. You can't see that. People don't measure that.
Mm-hmm.
When they're young, they're just focused on trying to
look good.
and make sure that the systems around, that they're protected from the systems that don't take care of them in old age, right? Mm-hmm. Getting old can be scary, so they think about that and how their safety is directly reliant upon living in such a way where you protect yourself from retirement. But the stuff that you can see, that all the exercise you're putting in, like, is protecting you in ways that you're going to be so thankful for
yes.
over the years. And you yep. can't see it, but you put that work in and it pays off.
Yeah. Sometimes you do a workout or a yoga session, or you just go for a walk and something is like, well, is this even doing anything? Does this even matter? Why am I even bothering? But it is all money in the bank towards your overall health and, you know, hopefully your longevity. I mean, any of us could get hit by a bus at any point, but hopefully that doesn't happen and you get to enjoy your health more into ripe old age. You know, say what you will about Dr. Colin Campbell or Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn. I don't agree with everything they say, but those guys take damn good care of their health and they are not young. I don't know how old Esselstyn is now. I'm going to look it up.
He's in his 90s, I want to say.
I'm going to look it up right now.
I'm guessing 94.
He's 88.
Wow.
Okay. So Dr. Colin Campbell is 88 years old. And every year we go on this cruise, we work on this cruise, and he is up at 6 a.m. power walking the track every single morning.
Mm-hmm.
And again, although I don't agree with everything, all of his dietary advice, I absolutely agree with eat lots of whole foods, fresh fruits and vegetables, eat plants. And he does that. He does live by what he says. And him and his wife, they are vibrant, elderly folks moving around, still giving lectures, standing on the stage for hours at a time, talking to people. Ditto Caldwell Esselstyn and his wife, like impressive folks. I hope and pray that you and I are power walking a track at 88 years old and able to stand on our feet for hours at a time.
Yeah. It's very true. Mm-hmm. And just having different voices in the community can definitely be helpful, right? So it turns into less of a debate and more of attack it from as many different angles as possible. Reverse disease, build muscle, eat healthily, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? I feel like we look quite often at the, how do I say this? The dietary dogma that can result because there are different voices that need to be heard in the community. When in reality, if you just look at everything harmoniously, it's how do I say this, right? As opposed to like reversing disease and longevity and beating up your body and being super fit, like you attack it from all angles and it all gets put together instead of there being such divisiveness to we get to a place where it's vegans attacking vegans because, you know, you got to be one thing or the other. Now, the truth is, you know, it all gets put together and you can really realize your truest potential and, dare I say, even be superhuman when you realize that now am I reaching a little bit, Dan, you think?
I would say you're reaching.
I'm being too optimistic here. Sorry, I digress. Anyways, we could just talk away at this, but I think really when it comes to genetic potential and putting muscle on, you're more capable than you think you are. Get past the 5-year mark. Understand that the rest of it is going to be a dig. Know that you're going to wind up filling in the gaps as far as where you didn't apply enough intelligence to your training, where life was stressful and you didn't have the healthiest eating habits, where you spent years perhaps not being well rested and properly hydrated. You learned your biomechanics and how to move well. Like, there are so many things along the way. It is a patient, long haul, long road to you realizing and reaching your genetic potential and your genetic ceiling. There's nothing wrong with pushing for that.
All right, moving on to our question and answer segment. Here we go, Giacomo. Does bloating from protein powder go away if you eat the same one every day?
The same one meaning the same protein powder?
Yes.
I'm going to go with no. because if you're getting bloating from protein powder, it's probably because of the fact that you're consuming protein in isolation. Also, it could be the type of protein powder. Certain types of protein powder are harder to metabolize than others for some people. Like pea protein, starchier protein powders are a little harder to metabolize. As opposed to, say, rice protein, which seems to be a lot easier for people to break down. So that said, I'm thinking maybe we're not considering protein powder and we're considering getting in a certain amount of protein. So if the question is framed as, if I eat enough protein and I'm having digestive discomfort, will I eventually have less digestive discomfort? And the answer to that is yes. Eventually you'll adapt to eating more protein, whether it's from protein powder or seitan or beans or like whatever, as long as your fiber isn't through the roof.
I would recommend checking out Zao protein powder, actually. So pea protein powder bloats a lot of people. It's just a very common protein, but it's got a lot of sodium in peas themselves. I don't know why, but it makes a lot of people bloat. Zao protein powder, it is pea protein powder and rice protein powder, which has the best amino acid profile, but they also ferment it with shiitake mushrooms, and that seems to make it much easier to digest. I'm not a huge protein powder person anyway, but I did try it just to test this theory out, and I did find it to be true. It was much less bloaty. So I would check out Zao. Z-H-O-U.
Danny, I swear I've been eating in a deficit, 1,500 max, for a month and burning 800 calories three times a week. But the scale isn't budging. What gives?
Okay, so I swear I've been eating in a deficit for a month and burning 800 calories three times per week. So I would like to know more about that 800 calories three times per week. Honestly, that is it says 1,500 calories max. I'm assuming this is a female. If it's a male, that's just way too little food, first of all. But if it's a female, 800 calories is a lot of calories to burn. That's like 2 hours of cardio for a woman. Weightlifting doesn't burn that many calories, really. Like anywhere from 75 to maybe 250 calories in a whole weightlifting session for a woman. Like, we're not lifting for the calorie burn. So I guarantee you that 800 calorie output, unless you are training for 2 to 3 hours a day, that is off for one. But it certainly sounds like you're training very hard three times a week. And maybe this is, it's only been a month. You could be retaining a lot of water. It sounds like if this is a small amount of calories for you and you're working out really hard and it's a brand new diet, your body's probably like, ah, whoa, what's going on? And it can cause a lot of water retention. And to me, retaining water inside of 4 weeks and not seeing the scale drop is not that strange. I would say maybe take it a little bit easier on the training sessions themselves. Make sure you're staying super hydrated. The fastest way to get water out of your system is to drink more water. So there's that. Of course, I would always recommend really, really fact-checking how many calories you're taking in also. So my gut says there's a drop coming. It just hasn't come yet. But if it doesn't come in the next week or two, take a look at those calories, because if it hasn't changed in like 5 or 6 weeks at all, you're not in a deficit. You think you're in a deficit, but you're not in a deficit for one reason or another. Either you're eating more than you think you are, you're burning less than you think you are, or your caloric needs are lower than you think they are, or any combination of those three things. If you are in a caloric deficit, you will lose tissue. Hopefully that tissue is fat, but it could be muscle as well if you're not eating enough protein. But, you know, water can hang around on your body for a little bit and kind of mask that, make you think nothing is changing when actually you have been burning through fat. I would say, like, how are your hunger signals? Because if you're losing body fat, you're probably feeling a little bit hungry. If you're not feeling hungry, you're probably not burning through what you think you are. So, yeah, so kind of two different answers there, but hopefully that's helpful. All right, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Vegan Proteins Muscles by Brussels Radio. Feel free to reach out to us at veganproteins.com. We have all different kinds of coaching for all different goals, levels, and budgets. So you could just hit the contact button there and we'll be happy to help you. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at Vegan Proteins and at Muscles by Brussels. If there's anything you'd like to hear, please let us know. Once again, thanks so much for tuning in. My name is Danny.
And I'm Giacomo.
And we will talk to you soon.